The first bill for our consideration this afternoon is House Bill 99, and it looks like we have amendments. Is that correct? 91, I'm sorry. Okay. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 91, introduced by Representative Lone. Alimony Termination, an Act Relating to Domestic Relations. Madam Chairman, your committee, number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 91, Alimony Termination, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Veitman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Ponell, Salazar, Winters, excused, Representative Pelkey. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 91 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, which I will explain. It's on page 2 of the bill. When there's an alimony decree, part of that decree is that if the person receiving the alimony ever gets remarried, they have 30 days to report back to the court that they got remarried. So if they don't do that, they're to be held in contempt. So on page 2, line 8, where it says they'll be held in contempt for failing to provide the ordered notice, we inserted the word for willfully failing to provide the ordered notice. That's the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Is there a
question?
Okay. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion passes. Back on committee amendment. Back on the bill.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
For the presentation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the sponsor of the bill from House District 12.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would also like to move two more amendments to the bill. House Bill Amendment 001. It was originally presented by the gentleman, another gentleman from Wyoming here, Cheyenne, Wyoming. And then also I would like to move, the second amendment, which is 002.
Representative Lone, we will just...
One at a time? I'm sorry.
Thank you. My apologies.
So this first amendment that we will discuss, if you look at the very last page of the bill, page 4, section 2, we have the act shall apply to the final decree of alimony entered in on or after July 1st, which is typical. We recommend that that be adjusted to January 1st, 2018. Also on line 11, making the effective date January 1st, 2018. And the reason for this amendment changes to allow lawyers to be trained on the change to this statute. So I stand for any concerns on this or any questions.
Thank you, Representative. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment number 2. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries. The Standing Committee Amendment number 2 has been adopted. We are back, Committee of the Whole, rather. We're now on Committee Amendment number 2. Representative Lone.
Thanks again, Chairman. I would like to provide this second amendment to the bill, and the reasoning for this is a clarification issue. As we were looking through the bill and actually addressing this bill, to add clarity, there was one section on page 2, line number 18, where it says, the court may from time to time, comma, and our concern was that time to time is very vague and ambiguous. So what we looked to do was strike that phrase time to time and add to it, the existing decree has not been adjusted within the previous 6 months, and two, a material and substantial change in circumstance has occurred warranting an equitable modification of the decree. And what this does is it puts some better boundaries upon when someone can return or refer a alimony case to the court to be questioned. So I stand now for any concerns with this change.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The standing committee amendment number 2 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Lone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Now I will speak on the bill. This bill is a bill that is intended to provide clarity to a rather ambiguous part of our statutes. Essentially, as the statute is written, alimony is only terminated at the will of the court. There's not really any guidelines or boundaries on that. So we look to put some walls on that figure, some right and left rulings for that. So in this bill, we look to at two particular areas that are actually in 31 other states' statutes right now. So this is not new to our nation. This is actually fairly common throughout our nation. And it essentially says that on page 3 that whenever a party remarries, that this alimony will be terminated. Or if there's a death, either of the person providing the alimony or a person receiving the alimony passes away, that alimony will be terminated. What we realized was as we adjusted 22-116 that we actually needed to alter 22-114 at the same time. And that just applied the previously discussed part about being in contempt. If you get remarried, that you do need to notify the courts that you've done so. I stand now for questions of the bill and address any concerns that anyone may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lone. Is there any discussion?
Question.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Question being having been called. All those in favor, vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. Our House Bill number 91 passes. Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 111. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 111, introduced by Representative Barlow, County Collective Accounts, an act relating to workers' compensation. Madam Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 111, County Collective Accounts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Garrew, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire, Sweeney. Signed, Representative Halverson, Vice Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Do we have a chairman on this? Chairman Barlow?
This set this bill aside and move it down below House Bill 120, and this move on to House Bill 117.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Moving on, then, we'll move on to House Bill 117. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 117, introduced by Representative Steinmetz, Operation of Motorboat While Intoxicated, an act relating to watercraft. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 117, Operation of Motorboat While Intoxicated, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Edwards, Eklund, Laux, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Bill number 117 do pass, and I further turn that bill over to the sponsor, and she'll explain it to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So hopefully this bill will float through the legislature. So I bring to you House Bill 117, Operation of a Motorboat While Intoxicated, and this is existing statute that we're amending today. So if you go to page 2, it'll show you what we're doing all through the bill. We're just taking the alcohol concentration and moving it from 0.10 to 0.08, where it applies to motorboats. That is just motorboats, not watercrafts. There is a handout in your box if you'd like to see more information about this incident. But what the definition of a motorboat is, it means any watercraft propelled in any respect by propulsion machinery powered by an energy source other than human effort. So we're just affecting motorboats, not watercrafts. A watercraft is any contrivance used or designed primarily for navigation on water. And I do want to make sure that you know that that's at 0.10 right now already, and we're not affecting that. Also, one thing that the department wanted everyone to know is water sport toy is defined in their rules and regs, and that means a sailboat, float tube, kite board, or any aid to swimming or fishing that is not defined under a watercraft. So we don't have a limitation on those, just on the other. So with that explanation of the bill, I'd stand for any questions.
You've heard the motion. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In regards to this piece of legislation, was it talked about in committee how the aspect of CDL works? Now, I know you don't have to have a CDL to drive a boat, but I currently hold a Class A CDL, and anytime I'm driving my personal vehicle, I'm still held to the Class A CDL requirements that takes me down to 0.04. So would those Class A CDL requirements, just like with a personal vehicle, fall down to the level of a motorboat?
Representative Steinmetz.
That's a good question, and I don't have the answer to that. I guess we could look that up. But this should not affect anything you're doing in your personal vehicle. This is just when you're on a motorboat. But I don't know how that transfers over when you're on the lake. That was one of the concerns and why we're trying to adjust this, is because it's 0.08 for vehicles, and a lot of times people leave the lake and they might be over that, and then they get in their personal vehicle and drive home.
Further discussion? You've heard the motion on a standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Standing committee passes. The standing committee amendment passes committee of the whole. No? Oh, it didn't? It says it has an amendment. Okay. Okay. No, I'm looking at the wrong one. Sorry. It passed committee of the whole. Thank you. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 40. Representative Northrup. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, you guys. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 40, introduced by Statewide Education. Education Accountability, an act relating to education accountability. Madam Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 40, Education Accountability, respectfully reports, seen back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when a committee of the whole rises report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 40 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment And let me just go through the standing committee amendment, and then I'll work the bill. But before I start, I'd like to say the bill is based off recommendations from the advisory committee. That's the committee that we have asked to help put this together. And they are statewide. They're a select committee on statewide education accountability, and it also helps Wyoming to conform with the accountability model and the ESSA requirements. And that's what this bill is trying to take No Child Left Behind and move it into ESSA. Okay, so as you can see on the standing committee amendment, we're going to delete continuing and say modifying on page 1, line 4. On page 1, line 6, accountability, we're going to insert after accountability, repealing the select committee on statewide education accountability. Told you that education was going to start getting rid of these select committees. This is the first one. Move to page 22. After the, we're inserting state superintendent in consultation with. We're asking the state superintendent to get involved with this. Page 22, line 18, and then it'll be as measured by. And then page 22, line 19, validate career readiness assessments is deleted. Okay, so the rest of that, as you read through that, from all that section 4, is inserting the Joint Education Committee, interim committee, into the bill and taking out the select accountability. So when you turn the page, you look at section 8. Section 8 is actually the section law from this 2016 session. And so once again, we're just taking it out. Here we are on the next page, page 3. We're taking out the select committee on statewide. Page 4. We're taking out the select committee on the statewide on lines 27. And it just goes on and on like that. So now let me go through the bill real quick. The meat of the bill is on page 3, where we look at line 12, and it says 21-2204, Accountability and Education Act, Statewide Accountability Education. And as you turn the page on page 4, you see the English language proficiency as measured by student longitudinal progress. That's the first one that's been put into this. ELL is going to be English language learners. That accountability is going to be a big part. In the district in which this town resides, there are 23 different languages being taught in school so that we can get them to become ELLs. In other words, that's 23 different people that are working languages. There's another one in just up where the Great Ski Slopes are, where there's 40% Spanish-speaking kids. ELL is going to be a big portion of what's happening from now on. The next paragraph, the State Board, through the Department of Education, and you can read that as well as I can. The next one down below that is the State Board through the Department of Education, and the Board shall execute through determination with a significant aspect to the school accountability system changes or based upon periodic review of the system that requires evaluation of the target and indicator levels for school performance. That's new language. There's some accountability in that. There's accountability state board. There's also going to be some for the superintendent and also for the district. We have to get these performance levels and ratings put together. Page 5, 6, you're just seeing an included comprehensive and target support on lines 12 and 13. Once again, on down on line 20 of page 6, revised by the December 2016 report, there was a report that came out from the accountability group in 12. We also have one in 16. We have to reference that back into law, including on the bottom of page 6, on line 23, we have new language, including comprehensive and targeted support up on top of page 7. And then you'll see where we're striking out consequences. So we're taking some of the consequences away from districts that were there beforehand. Page 7, we deleted a whole bunch of language. Page 8, deleted a whole bunch of language. Page 9, inserted more in with the school district and the, or I'm sorry, with the school district superintendent and department on page 16, and then page 19, school districts are partially meeting. Or I'm sorry, that was line 19, I'm sorry. On page 8, line 14, I'll just read it, because school districts designate as partially meeting. So what we did, and the ones that we deleted, We deleted those school districts that are exceeding expectations, and we deleted those school districts that are meeting expectations. And so now we're just working on those districts that are partially meeting expectations. And that's what that paragraph on line 14, page 8, is dealing with. Those that are partially meeting expectations shall file an improvement plan with the state superintendent, the department, and the state or the district superintendent also. And then it talks about what the plan will have in it. That plan comes on up, how it will be measured, how the improvements will be. And then the rest of the bill is conforming language until you get to page 13. On page 13, we have a new paragraph where we're starting to talk about how the plans will be submitted, that the school designated as partially meeting. Once again, we're just working on those schools that are partially meeting expectations or not meeting expectations under this paragraph of this section, shall file the required improvement plan to the first year of designation and submit yearly updates on the progress toward the goals and strategies outlined in the improvement plan, so long as the school maintains the same performance designation. So in other words, if you're not improving, you still have to keep filing it. Page 14 and 15 are our present law as it is now. 16, we have a revision there. J is made into K, and also on line 19, we've added a one word and took out consequences again on line 20. Page 17, we're talking about, again, the January 12 Education Accountability Report. That is one of the things that we're referencing back in law, and here we have on the bottom of that, on line 12, that the 16 educational report will be submitted to legislature, and we've seen that report. If you'd like to take a look at it, it's a good read if you're looking to sleep. Page 18, conforming language. Page 19, conforming language. 20 is conforming language. 21, at the bottom of it, starting on line 13, state student longitudinal academic growth in English language arts and mathematics as measured by the assessment administered under this paragraph, and we added in the language, and for all subsequent grades for which a state summative achievement assessment is administered in the immediately preceding grade, including a standardized college readiness test in grade 11. So we're coming back in here and we're looking at the accountability system and how we're going to measure it. This is the measuring of it. Page 22, you'll see the first amendment in there where we added in the superintendent in consultation with the Board of Education. Line 12 on 22 is a college readiness as measured by the standard college entrance exam. And so that this is one of the measures that we're going to be using. B is also a career readiness, and it's one of the college or one of the career measurings that we're going to be using. As you go through this, you'll see that on page 23, section 3 is actual repealing of a college standardness test that they were taking in 11th grade. It starts with an A and ends with a T. It doesn't leave much in imagination when it's three letters long. Section 4 has been renamed to Section 5. Section 5 has been renamed to Section 6. Once again, on line 16, we included the Joint Education Committee instead of the Select Committee. So it's conforming language to the amendment. Page 24, we renamed Section 6 into 7, and once again added conforming language to the Joint Education Interim Committee. Page 25, again, is adding the Joint Education Interim Committee into it and taking out the Select Committee. And page 26 is the end, just says all the things that Section 7 says, effective immediately upon completion of the action necessary for law.
Thank you, Chairman Northrup. That was riveting.
Yes,
thank
it you. Is.
You have heard the motion on the... Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have some questions for the good chairman. On line 22, I know we have different tests that we use for measurement. And really, that's kind of... that's what the main measurement tool is these tests. But on line 18, there, that career readiness test. I'm just wondering if that's something that's currently administered, or if that's something new that now we're going to test schools for. And I guess the other question there is, I'd just like to hear a little more in committee or from the committee. Was there concern from school districts? Did they push back on any of these provisions? Did they welcome this piece of legislation or not? I'd like to hear some of that if we can. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, we need to vote on the Standing Committee Amendment before we continue discussion.
Thank you. Chairman Northrup, do you have any? Okay.
Madam Chairman, I move the amendment. I'd like to call for the question on the amendment.
Question's been called on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no.
No.
Amendment passes. We're back on the bill. Representative Clem. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I know the good chairman was distracted, and so really the question was on line 22 again. And we took care of it somewhat by the amendment there, this career readiness and how it was measured, if we were adding a new assessment. And it sounds like that's going to be determined by the state board, and so they can hash that out. But the other question was, is this welcomed really by school districts? Did they push back against this? Was there any concerns that school districts had? I'd just like to hear a little more on that. Thank you.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question kind of applies to that as well. As we look back on page 2, it says it will establish long-term and interim performance targets. My question was, is that also tests? And will we have an unintended consequence of teaching to tests in the state instead of comprehensive education? Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let me answer the first question, and that is that the districts are receiving this pretty good because, first of all, if you look on page 7, line 11, before districts that were meeting or exceeding the expectations still had to file. And so here they are filing something when they're doing a good job. If you're a district and you're doing a really good job, you're meeting expectations or you're exceeding expectations, you still have to file to the state and tell them, hey, we're doing a good job. Now we're taking that away so that they don't have to do that. We're just looking at the districts that are not meeting expectations. We changed the whole thing. We lowered the bar down to just not. Because if you're not reporting to the districts or to the department, then we know you're doing a good job. But if you're reporting to the department and you're telling us how you're going to fix it, then that's what this bill is asking is, through the superintendent and through the state board, tell us how you're going to fix it. Tell us how you're looking at your measures that you're going to use. What's going to change to make your district better?
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Just a reminder, I've never been a big fan of and of accountability, so I asked to be on the accountability committee to work on this. And so what you have to understand is we are bound, you know, in order to get our federal dollars, whether you like it or not, we are bound to certain things. And so when No Child Left Behind left and we brought in ESA, Every Student Succeeds Act, you know, there was this hail, you know, it was a great thing, you know, we're going to reduce the amount of work and we're going to put more back to local districts, and we did to a degree. We got rid of AYP and a lot of stuff that just flat wasn't going to work. But with it came some new pieces, and so we have had to add, in the interim, we had to add these new pieces in. As we did that, the committee examined what can we take out, what can we constrain in that to get down to what's as little as possible. And so that's been the discussion. Some of this readiness we've in ESA, they asked for a fifth indicator, and we're continuing to work on that. And so this thing is going to evolve for a while. And so what I would say about districts is, you know, what districts want, they want it to stop. They want an end to it. They want a model they can understand and go forward. And until, you know, frankly, until ESA gets rolled out in rule and regulation, And until we satisfy some of this stuff, we're not entirely sure where the final will be. And this is an evolution. And I hope, you know, I'm not on education, and I certainly support the effort to just have education work on this and not have a select committee. But hopefully as this evolves, they will continue to look at what's in our original act and what can be taken out and what can be made to simplify it as best as can happen to as much as possible, so that local districts only have to do what's necessary to survive, to satisfy our federal nexus, and not be something that's more onerous that we're asking for as a state. So I urge you to support this bill, and you know, anywhere we can pare back that still lets us satisfy that federal nexus, I'm certainly supportive of. And that's what I have done doggedly for 3 years.
Thank you. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to page 22, lines 12 through 16, on the college readiness measured by standardized college entrance examination administered pursuant to Wyoming Statute 21-202A-30, in grade 11 and other college readiness indicators as determined by the State Board of Education, if you reference that statute listed, it says that it's going to be in coordination with local school districts by rule and regulation established program of administering a standardized curriculum-based achievement college entrance examination. Computer adaptive college placement assessment and a job skills assessment test selected by the state superintendent. So we reference this, we're doing this in coordination with the with our local school districts, and we're having those state school superintendent pick. But yet, in the new language, it's the State Board of Education is determining. So I guess I'm just lost in the weeds. Who's picking here, and does this need work?
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So understand, presently there's only two tests for college readiness. One starts with an A, one starts with an S. Predominantly, everybody on the western side of the Mississippi uses the A. So that's the college readiness. And then that test, because we don't try to be prescriptive, is left up to somebody to pick. Somebody has to go out and put an what is that term? Where do you go? When they choose a test, they put out a request for proposal. Thank you, RFP. And the RFP then is just being let right now. That's what the department did. The department just let that. The state board worked with them to get that portion of it done. And so we're working on that part of that through them. The career readiness is the same way. There's a test out there. It's available. This is also just an indicator of whether you're college ready or whether you're career ready. Those tests are out there. They're available for students to take. There's a difficulty within the group whether they're saying and or between these two. In other words, if you're a high school student and you're getting ready to graduate, do you have to take both tests or not? This is the model. We're talking about the model. We're not talking about what the students have to take. This is the model. When it gets to the school district level, then it becomes you can take one or the other. If you're college bound, you need to take the college bound test. If you're career bound, you need to take the career bound test. But in the model, we have to have both of them. And that's where that and that's on line 16 comes into play. In the model, we need to have both of these indicators there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. And so maybe I can answer the good the tall representative's question in the back. So the superintendent and the WDE is responsible for which test. You know, that's their task. The State Board of Education is the one that works on the accountability model and how that rolls out. And so when you see a readiness indicator, readiness is a component of the accountability model. So you have growth, you have achievement, you have equity, you have readiness, and now we're going to have, we're ultimately we'll have a fifth indicator. And so while the state board works on the accountability model piece, the superintendent has authority on the assessment itself. And I don't know if it was brought up by the good chairman, but this is a debate between the House and the Senate that's been going on. So if you look on page 23, line 9, section 3, there's a repealer. And in case the good chair didn't mention that, that repealer basically takes out the college readiness, you know, the one that starts with an A and ends with a T. It basically eliminates that test as part of the component for the achievement indicator. So, and that's been a big debate in the House and our good buddies across the way in the past, is should we totally rely on achievement in 9th and 10th, which is what all of this law will say, is that part of the indicator, or should we in fact bring in that other test as far as the achievement indicator? And so that's some of the debate we've had over time. This repealer takes it out. You are likely to see some action on second or third reading on this. I've been kind of debating on what to do there, but I just want you to all understand what the repealer is. This has been debated in the body before. It's likely to be debated again. So don't get confused between the assessment piece, which is a portion of how we build the accountability model, and then the accountability model. If anybody wants a tutorial on the accountability model, I certainly will try to give it to you. That's part of my problem with accountability, is we have too many different components. The other one that could give you a good tutorial on it is, frankly, the good representative from the warm side of the winds, who sat on the PJP during part of this process, and he can try to explain the intricacies of this whole system. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Freeman.
Thank you. Just a clarification. If you look on page 22B, which is 18 to 20, we took out as measured by a validated career readiness assessment. We took that assessment out of there. So now what happens is the career readiness can be defined as somebody who may have gotten their certificate or other programs that they have gone through that shows that they're career ready. So we've given the State Board an option to come up with several different items to show career readiness. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 40 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Bill passes. Moving on. House Bill 40 now passes Committee of the Whole. We are now, Representative Pinnell.
Madam Chairman, privilege to the floor. Privilege to the floor.
Yes, sir.
Well, folks, I want to draw your attention to the fishbowl back here. We have a large group of electeds, the clerks of district courts from throughout the state, and, of course, my clerk from my county. So if you would, please welcome, please stand.
Thank you, Representative Pinnell, and hello to Bighorn County. I see you there. Hello. Good to have you in the House. All right, moving on. We are now on to House Bill 120. Chairman Eklund. Oh, I'm sorry. I always want to skip over you. Would you please read the bill, Madam Clerk?
House Bill 120, introduced by Representative Summers. Maximum Speed Limit Petition. An act relating to the regulation of motor vehicles on highways. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 120, Maximum Speed Limit Petition, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Edwards, Piperinen. Noes, Representatives Eklund and Laux. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Bill number 120 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill and the amendment over to the bill sponsor.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Members of the 64th, I bring you House Bill 120 and ask for your favorable consideration. Madam Chairman, I would further move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, and I will explain the amendment in a moment. This bill provides a process by which counties can petition the Wyoming Department of Transportation Commission to reduce maximum speed limits on specified portions of highways in the unincorporated areas of their counties. Further, the bill allows a petition to be reason enough to reduce maximum speed limits without the need to do a study to verify a special hazard. So I'm going to bring in, Madam Chairman, I'm going to bring in the Committee of the Whole Amendment right now. And so when we had the meeting with the in the Standing Committee, and we had the department that oversees highways, and I believe I can bring them in because it's in the bill. So when YDOT testified, they were concerned that I was attempting to bring this petition from a county in front of the commission instead of the superintendent, and the superintendent is kind of the engineer arm of that agency and would have better info and would be a better place to work for that petition to reside and where it naturally would anyway. And so, Madam Chairman, what my Committee of the Whole Amendment simply does is it replaces commission with superintendent. And so all of the decision points would be at the superintendent, and you'll even see down there, let's go to page 3, lines 20 through 22. So on page 3, lines 20 through 22, and it really starts on line 19, Madam Chairman, after hearing and upon a majority vote, the commission may reduce the speed limit. So that whole section goes out because, once again, the decision point will be the superintendent. So, Madam Chairman, I think it's a fairly simple amendment. If anybody has any questions on the amendment, I'd certainly take it. But otherwise, I'd ask for question on the amendment.
Thank you. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Last session, Madam Chairman, we passed Senate File 72, which mandated a maximum speed limit of 70 miles per hour, except when special hazards exist. Many residents in my area expressed concern about this higher speed limit in high wildlife movement areas. Eventually, I set up a public meeting with a department representative, and to the department's credit, they created a special speed limit zone as a pilot research project to address a moose migration area. In that area, we had a total, last winter, we had a total, I believe, of 6 moose killed in that one area. I felt there was a better process for establishing an appropriate speed limit than a legislator exerting pressure on a state agency to resolve an incident. This bill will allow the public to bring concerns to their county commissioners who can evaluate the need to petition YDOT to reduce speeds in certain areas. Municipalities, specifically incorporated local governments, can set maximum speed limits on state highways within their jurisdictions through 315303. This bill will give counties a process to petition YDOT to lower speed limits in specified areas and then requires a response back from them. And I, Madam Chairman, I will walk you through the bill. So, Madam Chairman, we go in on page 1 in 315302, establishment of specific maximum speed limit by the superintendent. And you'll go on to page 2. You'll see there's amendment that adds subsection F to those things that a superintendent can look at to reduce a speed limit. And once again, I want to remind you that this is just to reduce speed limits. And then, Madam Chairman, we go in on page 3 and go into section 315303, and this is really the meat and potatoes of what I'm doing. and it creates a subsection F, which is this section is the same section where kind of authorities are given to municipalities, incorporated municipalities, to lower licenses. So this is the section of law where it sits. So subsection F would say a board of county commissioners may petition, instead of the commission, it will be the superintendent, to reduce the maximum speed limit on any part of the state highway system within the unincorporated area of its county. The petition shall specify the location of proposed reduced maximum speed limit, state the requested new maximum speed limit, and provide rationale demonstrating why the superintendent should reduce the maximum speed limit. Unless the Board of County Commissioners withdraws the petition within 120 days after receipt of the petition, the superintendent shall hold a hearing on the petition. At the hearing, the superintendent shall consider information presented by the Board of County Commissioners in support of the petition. The department shall also present information relating to the petition after the hearing. Then obviously in my amendment, I deleted the next little bit through page 3. And we bounce to the very last word on page 3, and then it goes within 60 days after the hearing, the superintendent shall issue and furnish to the Board of County Commissioners a written decision with reasons regarding the petition. Prior to the submittal of a petition under this subsection, a Board of County Commissioners shall consult with the department regarding the reduction of a maximum speed limit. And then the rest of it is promulgating rules and regulations. So, Madam Chairman, what I wanted to do, particularly with that last little bit, is ensure that the county commissioners talk with their local engineer. We did hear in committee, and I do believe that the good department is working harder and harder to solve these issues. But in my county and in the past, it has been a retracted process to try to reduce speeds in certain areas where we've had certain of these wildlife issues. And so this is just a process I've set in place, and I certainly would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm on and against this bill for several reasons. Over the last few years, members, this body, the people through their elected representatives, this body in particular, chose to raise speed limits across the state. And now this bill seems to undermine that process, saying, well, we can go ahead and piecemeal this throughout the state if a Board of County Commissioners wants to get together, and then they can petition not the commission anymore, it's just the superintendent. But what if you have a superintendent who wants these speed limits to be lowered anyway, and then works in conjunction with some of these counties and says, yeah, let's go ahead and get these speed limits lower. And then we completely undermine the authority of the legislature. And I hope that you follow that. Looking at some of your faces, and it seems to be a little bit confused. But this is something that, again, it piecemeals out our authority to counties. And it gives really no rhyme or reason that just they don't want high speed limits in certain areas. And they can give their reason, their justification, and then one point of contact, the superintendent is going to hear them, and the superintendent is going to make that commission. Before, when we had the commission in there, it was a little bit better. But now we just have one point of contact. So I would urge the body to say no to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chairman, Chairwoman. Just some questions that I have. That I think the bill is definitely well-intentioned, and I know the sponsor is going to have answers for me. So first, is there any possibility to just restrict speeds at certain times of the year? The testimony was on wildlife migrations. I don't see any process necessitated if they just want to do it during certain seasons, or if this is, you know, indefinite. And that's my next question. What's the process to reverse this? So, you know, for a couple of years, you have one set of commissioners, they petition, it's granted, you reduce the speed limits. How do you do the inverse to repetition the commission to raise them, or are we just going to permanently set them at a lower level without a recourse of how to put them back in place should a new commission or new information or a new road, et cetera, et cetera? I don't see the inverse reaction of how to retroact this. So if those questions could be answered.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. And so on the first question of the last speaker, no, this is not the issue in my area. Was a wildlife migration corridor. It was also in an area where there was a high level of subdivisions, and there was concern among those subdivision owners as well about the speed in that certain area. So no, it's not just about that. It could be about, in fact, we heard testimony in committee about an area in the southwest corner where there was an accident that killed an individual, and then YDOT did react to it. It is an opportunity for a county and local citizens to help identify those areas where there is a problem. One thing that I would say is this isn't a mandatory thing. The superintendent doesn't have to do this. They will do their study and they will complete their work. What this does is really provides a process. You know, we as a legislature mandate things, but we also like to see more local control. And so what this really does is give local people and county commissioners the ability to go, okay, YDOT, there's this section here we think you really need to take a look at. We talked a lot in committee about whether the 120 days plus the 60 days should give them ample opportunity to study that situation and then come back and say, you know, there's really not a justification. There's no real concern here, so we're not going to move the speed limit, or, in fact, there is. You know, it's still a 70-mile-an-hour, and there's nothing contemplated in this bill for the reversal of that other than any time a county commission could petition YDOT, the superintendent, to increase the speed limit. It's still his decision. He'd have to go through all the safety studies whether to increase that limit, but back to the 70. You couldn't go beyond that, obviously.
Thank you. Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I speak on and in favor of this bill. I'll start with the premise that I will always be standing at this podium in favor of local option. When counties have the ability to rule their areas, I think it's better for everybody. The county in which the bringer of the bill lives and the adjacent county in which I live, I don't have the actual numbers, but the number of collisions because of wildlife are large. And the cost to both the state and the people driving those cars is significant. So whatever we can do to reduce the number of these collisions is a pretty important thing. In the county to the south, I know the Department of Transportation built two rather significant wildlife overpasses, and I've actually witnessed the wildlife using them. That is one method for reducing collisions. What the good representative is bringing in this bill is another one. In my county, we've actually been able to make some changes in which we've used either seasonal reductions or nighttime reductions in speed limits. They've been rather protracted conversations, but they've been very beneficial in terms of reducing the number of wildlife collisions. So I am strongly in support of this bill and urge you all to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Laux.
Madam Speaker, I rise in opposition to this bill. And quite frankly, it's pretty simple to me. The department itself does a really good job of taking care of this anyway. And the testimony that we heard in committee, they gave several examples, and I believe that it was that they had 11 of these type of issues before them in a very short period of time. They've taken care of 9 of them and working on the other 3. And in my opinion, looking at the bill, it might even take longer for something like that to be rectified with the bill. They're doing a great job at the department, and I wish we'd just let them do what they do well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Larson.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I am up against this bill also. We had this same situation come up in my area on the road to the big park. We went through the process, met with the superintendent, made calls to the department head, and folks got a chance to meet, and it took a couple meetings, but the speed limit was lowered, and it works well. Let's vote this down.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? I'm sorry, Representative. Go ahead, Mr. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Again, for the sponsor, first of all you got to do is just kind of let off the gas to slow down, so that's fine. Because they are maximum speed limits. Keep that in mind. But I do have a question. When we look at 315.303, and so in Section B, it requires the department to promulgate rules and regulations to allow the local, and I need my glasses here, local authorities in their respective jurisdictions to make a determination of the proper speed limit. So my question to you then is, what does this do in addition to it?
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. So if we go into 303, and I was getting distracted there, so I might not have got all this, but in subsection B, what subsection B says, in compliance and rules promulgated by the department, local authorities in their respective jurisdictions may determine the proper maximum speed limits for all streets and highways within the respective corporate jurisdictions. So it's my understanding that that's always been kind of the highway or the municipality side, and not out in the county, so to speak.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to follow up on that, because I believe that when they're talking about local authorities in their respective jurisdictions, in there, they're giving that to your municipalities, and then they're also giving that to the county commissioners within their county, and that this mechanism already exists if they want to do it. I'll check that out further.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So to speak to that point, actually, that there's a highway that runs between the city that likes the jackalopes and the city that mines a lot of coal. So if you know what that road is. And there's as you come out of the one community, there's an industrial portion, and you go through a very small community, and then you come to another community, and then you get to the city where the coal is mined. There's about 10 different speed limits in that thing, and they are inconsistent. And the reason they're inconsistent is because you're moving from a municipality to a county to a municipality and back out. So if you want to find a speed trap in my community, be along one of those stretches, because that is, and I don't mean that law enforcement is there waiting to, but that is a problem. And the discussion that we've had when we were trying to get some funding to actually improve the safety on that road was, how do we have a better approach to getting speed limits adjusted so we have, you know, ease into a community or ease out of community and ease back into it, so there isn't these sudden shifts and changes. It's still not fixed. And it's not fixed because we don't have a decent process. And maybe the good Chairman of Minerals is right. Maybe the agency responsible for doing this is not its interpretation. But this is one way to get both the municipal side and the county side the ability to have a say, and let's have a smooth ingress and egress of it, so as to speed in and out of our communities, because it is a concern. It is a concern in the two communities that I represent about this issue of speed and how you get it actually adjusted in a meaningful way for safety. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. And once again, this is just allowing a process. I know in my local area, there was some another agency tried for a long time to get this speed reduced, and it wasn't until I stepped in as a legislator that this transpired. And all I'm saying is, this is just a process by which local people can try to influence the process on specific road stretches that they know where there's concerns. I love 70 miles an hour. I drive it to the limit. I drive further than most folks to get to all of these meetings. So certainly I appreciate that, but I also appreciate the ability of locals to have to kind of have a say in the process, or at least have a process.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And to the Chair of Labor Health, I appreciate his comments and his efforts there. And I agree that we need to go back to the department and get good rules and regulations put in place. Where some of my concern comes up on this, more than anything, is the fact that if you get a group of people, such as was given as an example, some people in a rural subdivision who go in and have the ear of a county commissioner and they're pounding the table that they can get that speed limit adjusted because of some perceived inconvenience to them of where they've located their home. And this opens the door up for that to happen. And so that is my concern with it. So when you look at this, you go to your county commissioners, they make the petition to the superintendent, goes to the commission comes on back, and the commission has a hearing. So then that comes on back to your county commissioners. But where is it where your county commissioners are actually having a public forum or a discussion with everybody in that particular area? And so I do completely understand trying to get some consistency, and there are some areas up in the Bighorn Basin that are famous for this. So I can greatly appreciate that. However, I think you're opening the door for a couple of people who get really upset because the car is going too fast by their house or by the turnoff to their house or by their hay sack or whatever it is that gets them upset, and then they go and they pound on a county commissioner, and then here we go for no real legitimate reason.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Maybe say this last thing from my perspective about why this is valid or important. And that is that when you approach the agency that could handle this, they say, well, our hands are tied because someone else higher up that provides a whole bunch of funding to us gives us all these guidelines, and this doesn't fall within something we have purview to do this. And so it may not be fair, and maybe it be right, and it may not be accurate, but they rely on, we don't have that authority because it's not granted to us through state. And that was exactly what occurred in the community that I lived in. They said, we can't do this because you're not part of this discussion. We're going to do it our way because of the guidance that comes from above. Right or wrong, that's the answer my community received. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. And I guess the response to the good country lawyer, we haven't used that term yet, the good country lawyer. He's back to being the good country lawyer in the body now. The response to that would be this petition would still go through the superintendent, and he would still do his study. And in the end, he would make a decision, but he would at least understand where the local population thinks there's an issue, and at least there would be a process and a recourse for a local government to come and say, hey, this makes sense here. Thank you.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you. Speaking on and against the bill, so for years and years, since I've been in the legislature, we've been trying to coax WIDOT into raising the speed limits, and finally, and in different locations, and finally, we had to bring a bill to force them to do it. And then they did that very reluctantly. In fact, we had to come back the next year after we did it because they hadn't even put the signs up yet. Because if they want to put a sign up for what they want, they got it. They put them up, and they put a sign up when we changed the law. They didn't put the signs up because they had to do studies before that happened. The reason that we have certain speed limits on these roads is because, I mean, we know that if every locality had the option to slow down the cars coming by their house, they'd do so. And in fact, there's no logic, really, if you drive around this community. You've got 30s and 40s and 50s in places that just kind of make no sense to me. And a lot of times it has to do with just if you've got some vocal local folks that just really want the traffic to slow down. And so if those folks beat the drum and they go to the county commissioners, and the county commissioners are going to, that's what their job is, and it's hard to say no to those folks. And trust me, the superintendent wants to slow us down because that's just their their thought process. They didn't like the speed limits to begin with. And so, really, the thing is, I don't want to go 55 anymore between the middle of the road, middle of the state, and going to the Wind River Mountains. And if I have to slow down at every little nook and cranny just because the local folks want us to slow down, I think they'll slow it down. So I'm just on and against the bill.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Chairman Eklund? No? Question having been called, all of those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 120 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Division having been called, those in favor, please stand. Twenty-seven. Those opposed, please stand. So House Bill 120 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Thank you for the great debate. Now we will move back up the list to House Bill number 111. Chairman Barlow,
would the reading
clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 111, introduced by Representative Barlow, County Collective Accounts, an act relating to workers' compensation. Madam Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 111, County Collective Accounts, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Garou, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire, Sweeney. Signed, Representative Halverson, Vice Chair.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Or no? Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 111 do pass. And, Madam Chairman, with your permission, I will explain the bill.
Permission granted.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a fairly quick bill, short bill, goes into workers' comp, and it allows the 23 counties in our state to go together and form a single entity for the purposes of workman's comp. So you gain two things. You gain the power of a larger body, which brings down rates, and you also gain the ability to have a coordinated safety, et cetera, type programs, which also bring down the cost. This same concept is being brought to us both by the agency that oversees workers' comp and by that organization that represents our counties, and it's being actually done in a state that is north of the one that's to the south. And that's been in the last couple of years, and it's made a considerable difference in their workers' comp rates. And just to have a range, workers' comp rates for a county government range in the 100 to 400K range, 400,000K range, because based on the number of employees, et cetera. So larger the pool, they believe there's a way to bring down rates through two. One is just the mass, increased mass, and two is the ability to manage. And the management part is important because if you're a small county, let's say up in the Northeast, you don't have extra personnel to manage some of the safety programs that, so you can take care of some of the discounts that are available through this, through the program for safety, et cetera. Whereas the larger counties, they have the capacity, have manpower, have HR departments that can do the safety things. So this is, if you will, a pilot project. It's of great interest. You can see on the sponsor sheet, there's quite a few former county commissioners on there that think this would be a way that counties could hopefully pull back on some of their costs, bring in some of their costs. It takes a collective effort. It can't be half of the counties or a third of the counties, et cetera. It really has to be a risk pool. If you think about it with insurance, a risk pool comes together. Now, if this proves functional through the process, then other entities could add into this, municipalities, other governmental entities. But the way it currently reads is county governments or county governmental entities. And then, obviously, while we're adding that to the definition, and then adding just the component that says the division may actually do this. So with that, Madam Chairman, I would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question. I'm just wondering if this will affect workers' compensation rates for private companies that pay into the fund. You know, this is balances out all somewhere. If we give county governments a break, does that increase everyone else's fees?
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't think there's any break involved here. It's simply a way we aggregate something together so that we have a single employer instead of 23. The workers' comp, the rates that are both in this this fund and the fund that deals with unemployment insurance, those are meant to be actuarially sound. So they adjust based on the need, based on the claims, so that we can actually forecast out and see what our potential risk is out there. So the rates would certainly go down if the base stayed the same. But the bases move every year based on the level of risk or the level of claims that are out there. So yes, there would be an advantage, but it's not an undue advantage that some other company wouldn't get, because the same thing occurs within our private industries. Two companies merge together just by the sheer fact that they're now twice as big. Often they gain a benefit from having a lower cost because they can, one, take advantage of more of the discounts if they invoke whatever program. We have numerous safety programs which bring down the rates. And two, they're able to better manage their risk through that. So I don't think it is putting undue burden, and the risks of all these different entities is based on that industry and the industry standards for what is being actually claimed within workers' comp. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Laux.
Mr. Madam Chairman, I too have got some questions, particularly from what the last question bearer brought. So this will affect the size of the pool, so somehow it's got to affect the rates of private people, I would think, and I would hope we'd have that question answered before we get to third reading. Please.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So I think it's the same question again, and maybe I'll certainly get a better answer. If I don't get it this time, I'd ask you to move it forward, and I'll get better information from the division and come back. But the rates that are established based on the claims and the actuarial soundness that we need to accommodate out into the future. So, yes, and I can't quantify whether the benefit of this type of an approach, this aggregate approach, is more from the safety and more from the aggregation of having better safety programs and taking advantage of safety, because that in itself, workers' comp is based on two things: the frequency and the severity of the claim. We made that change a couple of years ago in the state of Wyoming. It used to be just on frequency. Now it's on severity and frequency. So it's a dual test. So the more often you have a claim and the more serious the claim, that affects your rates. So if we can bring the bigger the entity, they can do better safety, they can bring the frequency and the severity of their claims down. They also have the advantage of being able to spread the cost, administrative cost, over all of the, from one entity over all of the entities. There's probably actually a third benefit in that too. The administrative cost would be shared more broadly. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Laux.
Madam Chairman, I thank the good chairman for his knowledge and explanation. And I'm sorry that I don't have a grasp on it, but so if this new employer, so to be, that has all these new people that come into it, and if they have a whole lot of claims, will it affect the rest of us that are little companies on the outside? And I hope that makes sense. Thank you.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The severity and frequency of claims affects all, affects the entirety. So whether it's a private entity or a public entity currently, under current statute, if there is, let's take something that occurred on the same highway I spoke about earlier this, in the last debate on the last bill. There was a transportation company that was involved in a very serious accident. There were lives lost, a lot of vehicles involved. And that affected rates for the people that drive around the little cars, yellow cars that take fares in every community in the state, because those cars are in, are in the same structure as that great big motor carrier that was in that. They're in the same bus. So it does affect across, you know, a broad range. There's another effort underway to actually try to discriminate more so that those folks aren't tied into this other group. But it certainly, if the more, if you're in a class and there is a major claims out of that, it will affect your class, no question about it. But that is true whether it's on the private side or on the public side. That is, that's across the board because it's based on the claims. Wyoming Constitution set up the work, this system, and this system was so that workers would have a way to be taken care of, and individual employers would have some level of immunity from the huge liabilities out there if someone is injured or killed on the work site. And this is the way the state has chosen through our Constitution to address that. Certainly it has an impact. This is one way that there's the counties and the county governments believe they can better manage the costs involved with the workers' comp process. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. Is there further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Barlow's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 111 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 111 has passed the Committee of the Whole. House Bill number 114. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 114, introduced by Representative Brown, Service and Assistance Animals, an act relating to service and assistance animals. Madam Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 114, Service and Assistance Animals, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
Thank you. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 114 do pass and would turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from District 9.
Thank you. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I bring to you a bill, Service and Assistance Animals, and this is actually something that came up to me during my campaign, and I felt very passionate about, and decided to bring this forward. And we have some fantastic support, and we heard some great testimony in committee on this. So before I move and actually go through the bill, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to the bill, and I can explain that very quickly. This is basically a typo that we found out that basically references the correct term in the catalog of Federal Register. It takes it from 35.126 to 35.136. This actually references service horse, if any of you can believe that. So with that, I'll stand for any questions on this amendment.
You've heard the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 passes.
With that, Madam Chairman, I'd also like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to this bill as well, and then that will make the explanation of the bill a heck of a lot easier. What we're looking at here is this provides protection for owner-trained service animals. And we heard some good testimony about the amount of animals that are trained by their owners, and the way that the current law is written is, in current statute, is that if a service animal is harmed or killed, it's only given restitution for an animal that is actually certified by a reputable company, basically, is the way that the current statute looks. So what we've done is we've stricken that language out, and we've allowed the court a little bit more latitude to provide restitution to animals that are trained by their owners. And again, with that, I'll stand for any questions on this amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Amendment passes. We are back on the bill.
Okay, I'll make this as short and sweet as possible. If we turn over to page 2, we just start looking at some of the changes that we've done. And basically on line 9, we strike the language and we make the determination a little bit better to determine what is a service animal and assistance animal, and we'll get into that in a few seconds. But we just strike a little bit of information there, and we decide that any place is allowable in this particular language. Going down to line 16, we keep service animals allowed in public entities as specified by the Federal Register as well. Flipping over to page 3, assistance animals are allowed in rentals and residential properties as allowed by HUD rules as well as the Federal Fair Housing Act. The reason we delineate between these two animals, between a service animal and an assistance animal, is ADA actually defines as this is an assistance animal or is a service animal, and HUD rules determines a assistance animal. And what we have to do here is we have to make sure that we're not overexerting our ability on this particular piece of legislation to provide too many protections for animals that are not considered service animals. So that's what this portion does here. And then down on line 11, a big key piece of this legislation is providing protection for those who choose to allow an animal into their place of business that is underneath their understanding is a service animal. And if that service animal attacks or does anything to a particular another animal or anything like that, that person is held immune from those charges. And from here on out, we just go to conforming language at the bottom of page 3. We flip over to page 4, and this is where we add the misdemeanor fine. And we really felt that this was a good level option here to provide an opportunity to people to actually decrease the amount of use of these. They're not necessarily illegal, but they're not true service animals in these facilities. And so if you look in your box, there's a couple of handouts that were brought to you, and one of them is a sign. And this is a particular sign that is in the state to the farthest west of us and has lots of beaches. This particular sign is something that a lot of communities, a lot of retail locations, restaurants and lodging, they'd like to be able to have this type of notice up that says if you knowingly and willfully misrepresent a service animal, you can be cited for a misdemeanor fine, and it can be up to $750. That gives a lot of latitude to the courts, though. So if it's a first-time offense, of course, it can be absolutely nothing. If it's multiple offenses, it can be tracked through that as well. Page 4, we just go on to the definition of an assistance animal and how that goes into the HUD rules in the Federal Fair Housing Act. And then on page 5, we go into the definition of service animals and how they are defined in the Catalog of Federal Register. Felt it easier to type those out and just reference the Catalog of Federal Register as opposed to bringing in all the language that they have. It's a little sweeter and a little bit more simpler there. And then the last thing that we have is updating the current statute that we have on the harming of it or the killing of a service animal. And what this does is this, the amendment that I just explained a few moments ago, this allows for the latitude of the court system to provide a little bit more information to people who claim to have lost their dog or have their dog has been injured. It gives the court a little bit more latitude and also performs a performs the capability allows the court to perform owner-certified animals and provide restitution for those as well. And with that, it looks like we've got quite the lineup back here for some questions, so I'll stand for questions.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 114 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 114 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are on to House Bill 152. Clerk, Madam Clerk, would you please read the bill?
House Bill 152, introduced by Representative Lindholm. Search and Rescue Operations, an act relating to search and rescue operations. Madam Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 152, Search and Rescue Operations, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
Thank you. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 152 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, but there should have been one, and I think I'll turn over the bill sponsorship and the Committee of the Whole amendment to the good representative from District 1.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go ahead and dispense with the Committee of the Whole amendment right now. As you can see on page 3, line 15, we add or sheriff. That's consistent with the rest of that that specific statute right there, so it's just a cleanup piece of legislation. And unless anyone has any questions on the Committee of the Whole amendment, which I'll move Committee of the Whole amendment number 1. Sorry about that. Unless anybody has any questions.
Questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor, please vote by saying aye. Opposed, say no. Amendment passes. We are back on the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 152, Search and Rescue Operations, this piece of legislation takes into a parity situation. Currently, volunteer firefighters, you can't hold them accountable for their actions when they're performing in their duty, specifically as their duty. So if something were to happen, you can take the county to court, those types of things. You can take the state to court, but you can't specifically name volunteer firefighters, whereas you can specifically name and go after search and rescue volunteers. Now, granted, these are volunteers. These are your individuals that are doing this in their off time, and we've had some situations. In fact, we had specific testimony on this situation from over on the western side of the state. An individual was skiing and decided to cross the boundary, the rope boundary, and got off into some terrain. He never came back. And they sent out search and rescue after this individual, and they were too late. They found him in a creek the next morning, froze. Horrible situation. The family decided to take the search and rescue. They sued the county, and they specifically named individuals on the search and rescue team, and they took them to court. As that was being litigated, what ended up happening was one of those search and rescue volunteers that was named in the lawsuit ended up in a bad accident in a helicopter crash on another search and rescue operation, and he passed away. They went to the family that was suing and said, this individual's passed away. Will you take him off your suit? And they said no, and they went after his estate. These are volunteers. These are the very best of our, as you know, this is you. This is our neighbors, our family. This is volunteers. This is a parity situation. We're just putting them on the same level playing field as volunteer firefighters. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll go through the bill. So the first part of the bill, Wyoming Statute 11-125, includes search and rescue volunteers into the blanket immunity for volunteers in the B portion. Specifically, it makes them personally immune from civil liability for any act or omission resulting in damage or injury at the time of the act or omission. This immunity is further described in D to say that any civil suit against the organization because of the negligent act or omission of a volunteer.
proof of the act or omission establishes the responsibility of the organization. Under a legal doctrine, that makes employers liable for their employees. Therefore, the insurance coverage to defend the volunteer found under Wyoming Statute Title I, Chapters 39 and 42 is not needed. And in fact, you'll see on page, pardon me, Madam Chair, page 4, if you look at your appealer, 139, 103A, 4D is actually repealed. It's no longer needed. The search and rescue volunteer personally cannot be civilly sued, so it's no longer needed under that act. You'll notice that firefighters are not included in Chapter 39 or 42 either, so this treats search and rescue volunteers much like firefighters. You also notice in the legislation that it specifically says under the sheriff, so specifically page 2, line 23, or a sheriff as part of a search and rescue operation. The specific reason that stating is because search and rescue operations have to happen underneath the sheriff's duly responsible. So only search and rescue operations that are happening under your county sheriff would this bill cover. And with that, I'll stand for any questions on the bill.
Questions? All right. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 152 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 152 has passed the Committee of the Whole. House Bill 161. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 161, introduced by Representative Pelkey. Divorce, residency, an act relating to domestic relations. Madam Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 161, Divorce, Residency, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
Thank you, Reading Clerk. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 161 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will turn the shortest bill of the session over to the good representative from District 45.
Representative Pelkey.
Thank you. This is a relatively short bill. It's also a very simple bill. It makes Wyoming divorce law consistent with that in many other states, allowing a party to initiate a divorce suit even though they're not currently a resident of Wyoming. If the defendant remains in Wyoming and there's a hypothetical situation, for example, if a spouse is a victim of abuse and finds him or herself compelled to move to another state, they can still initiate divorce proceedings even though they've resided in another state for more than the mandatory 60 days, they'd be able to initiate divorce proceedings in Wyoming where jurisdiction may make more sense. This provides a little bit of latitude to parties in the divorce. It doesn't represent a major change in law other than that, and I would urge your support.
Questions? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 161 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 161 has passed the Committee of the Whole. House Bill 98. Would the reading clerk please read the bill? Gets me every time.
House Bill 98, introduced by Representative Greer, LLC Dissolution Distributions, an act relating to limited liability companies. Madam Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 98, LLC Dissolution Distributions, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Signed, Representative Laux, Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 98 do pass, and I'll explain the bill.
Please do.
Thank you. So in deference, in no disrespect to the good chair of corporations, this actually is the shortest bill. but a very important bill nonetheless. For those of you who use business entities, you select different business entities based for a number of reasons, but typically they're driven by how you wish to be taxed. And one of the advantages of an LLC is that it is taxed as a partnership. One of the benefits of being taxed as a partnership is you can dissolve it without incurring any income tax by pulling the assets out. Or at least that's what I thought the law was for 23 years. So Wyoming, as you all know, was the first state developed and passed the LLC Act. So we've got a proud tradition of this. Somewhere, I'm going to get this wrong, in 2008, I think it was, the state of Wyoming adopted the Uniform LLC Act, which was vetted through a task force and is actually a very good act. It came to my attention this summer that on the dissolution of an LLC, which you'll find in your statutes in 1729-708, it provides that when you're winding up an LLC, you no longer want to be in this type of formal partnership. When you wind it up, you pay off your obligations, your debts, and your bills, and then you distribute the assets. Well, one of the advantages of distributing assets out of an LLC is supposed to be, so for example, if you put real estate in, so let's say you and your brother put in real estate into an LLC, and when you put it in, it has a value of $1,000. And then you go along and you farm it for 10, 15, 20 years, and you get to the end, you say, you know what, we're done being in business together. I want to dissolve this LLC, make sure we don't have any debts, and you take half of it, I'll take the other half, and we'll just distribute it out to ourselves, the land. Well, there's no tax consequence to that. Okay, that's the same thing under our federal tax code. If you look at this, our Uniform LLC Act says that you have to, without this amendment, it says that all distributions under this, under subsections B and C, which you can't see because of the drafting, of this section shall be paid in money, which would require you to sell that land and then distribute it out, the money. And if you sell that land, guess what? You pay taxes on it. So this is something that I feel very strongly that we need to get cleaned up. And by doing this, we're fixing the potential of forcing sales of assets when there's disputes with LLC members. But more importantly, is we're preventing an IRS agent from coming in and looking at a large transaction and saying, you know what, your state statutes require you to sell this asset, so we're going to go ahead and deem a sale to have occurred and charge the tax to you. So I very much appreciate your support of this bill.
Thank you. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 98 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 98 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I get a privilege on the floor?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, folks. Behind us in the fishbowl, we have one of our one of the county commissioners for Niobrara County, Mr. Pat Wade, and one of my constituents. So, thank you.
Welcome to the House. We are on House Bill number 153. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 153, introduced by Representative Jennings, Parental Rights, an Act Relating to Parents. Madam Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 153, Parental Rights, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Thank you. Once again, Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 153 do pass. And for the explanation of the bill, I turn it over to the prime sponsor.
Representative Jennings.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much. This is a bill that we've seen before. I brought this 2 years ago, and I just wanted to kind of spill out the reason for it. This proposed amendment, this bill, preserves the traditional view that we probably all here ran on, that parents have the right to, the fundamental right of raising their children. And with that, I'd like to go through the bill. This bill has 2 years ago passed out of Judiciary 9-0, came to the House 59-1, and somehow got lost in on the body at the other end. So this has had very good support, not only in this body, but in committee. And so I'll take you through the bill, if I might. In the very beginning of it, and I want to address one of the issues that was brought up in committee also, this is something that was not spelled out in the U.S. Constitution or the Wyoming Constitution. And so the intent of this is just what I just read there, that it's just to spell out the fundamental right of parents to direct the upbringing of their children. In the very first part of that, it says, relating to parents providing for parental rights to direct the upbringing and education. In committee, it was brought up that how would that affect schools? And I have a number of cases we went back and looked that up, a number of cases at my desk. I didn't have time to do the handout, but there's a threshold thing there that parents' rights, when they enroll the child in education in a public school, one of our major federal courts stated that parents basically had lost a case because they stated that their fundamental parental rights basically stopped at that threshold when they enrolled that. It doesn't stop their right to ask or contest with your typical rights, but it's not, it does not, this bill would not give special rights for that. On lines, starting on line 12, page 1, the liberty of the parent to direct the upbringing. Now, and the first question that I had was, well, why wasn't this put in? And so I thought about that a lot, and I think that this was not spelled out by our forefathers because they believed that their struggle for self-determination included this. And so I think they didn't think that there would ever be a point where courts might erode this a little bit. But in the last 20 years since the Troxell case, it has been eroded some, and then some cases back east where minors were separated from their parents for over medical decisions. On B, on page 2, the intent of this bill is to protect good parents, and we'll address the others here in just a moment. Without demonstrating the interest of the government as applied to the parent or child in a compelling state interest. So it gives the parent the fundamental right, and the state has the compelling, they have to have a compelling interest to revoke those rights. Abuse, neglect, endangerment, things that are on the books now. Which in D, I'll come back to C in just a second, D continues the current laws that we have to adjudicate a person's parental rights to be terminated. And so we're not touching any of that at all. If you're a bad actor, the law is still in effect. And C was asked a little bit about in committee, and really all C is addressing is that for future legislators to come back to this, we just want them to look at this. We're not saying that they can't change it or modify it or things of that nature. So with that, I would stand for questions, or if none, I'd ask the
questions. Are you ready for the question? No, I'm sorry. Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I have one question for the bringer of the bill. So in the state of Wyoming, we require a child to have an education, go to school, have an education. We require that. You can do that through a charter school, homeschool, whatever, but we require that. So my question to you is if this were to be passed, would we then allow a parent to would the state then not have any control over whether that child went to school or not? So that's the legal question I have, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Jennings.
Madam Chairman, no, this would not affect the laws as far as education is concerned. And the courts have upheld that same thing, that parents, you know, they might have the right to go in and say, I don't want little Johnny taking this class. But the court has repeatedly said, when you enroll that child, when you make those decisions for your education, you can choose to opt out of that public school, homeschooling or whatever's available with the state now, but you cannot be unreasonable in that. You can ask the question, you know, you can say, well, I might not like this particular curriculum, but no, you, and the courts have upheld the school districts repeatedly.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I need to know who is, what's the legal definition of parental rights? Is it the biological parents? Is it the custodial parents? Is it the step parents that that exert these controls? I'd like to kind of have a better idea of who we are talking about as being parents.
Representative Jennings.
Madam Chairman, the legal rights, I think, and there's probably more lawyers here than me, better legal minds, but the issue, what the state determines, if the rights have not been adjudicated away or terminated, then it could be the biological, it could be the other ones that you mentioned there, and the it's who the state would recognize as was the guardian parents of those children.
Okay. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So homeschool students are still required to report at this time to the districts and report back and say that they're at least educating their children and what the curriculum is. Does this infringe upon that? And if so, how will the district be able to keep track and make sure that those students are being educated?
Representative Jennings.
Madam Chairman, this does not change how we're doing that at this point. If they're currently by state law required to do that, then they would still be required to do that.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So my question is, if a child is critically ill and the parents, for their reasons, opt not to get care for that child, how are the interests of the child represented?
Representative Jennings.
Madam Chairman, just like they would be now, the state would have a compelling interest to intervene there. And this does not speak to that. Endangerment, abuse, neglect, the state has a compelling interest to be involved and should. And this bill doesn't affect those laws whatsoever.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We've heard a bunch of things that state statutes and constitutional issues where this statute does not affect it. Is there any, what's the set of circumstances exist in our statutes where this particular bill would trump a law? For example, like juvenile crime or something like that, or juvenile justice. There's probably lots of examples, but if you've provided a good string of instances where this would not apply or would be trumped by education laws and so forth, where would this have applicability in anywhere in our statute?
Representative Jennings.
Madam Chairman, mostly what this is doing is giving the courts clear direction when they're making decisions that as they have a case come to them, that the parents' rights traditionally have been respected as a fundamental rights. And so they wouldn't necessarily, I hesitate to use the word trump, but it would, it would spell clarity to the courts that the parents have the fundamental right in the upbringing of the child. And a particular case to that, it could reach into education if it didn't have to do with, you know, if it wasn't already covered, I suppose. But we pretty well covered that, the education aspect, and this does not speak to taking away the education part.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and in support of this bill, I think as far as an example would be is physical discipline. I make no bones about it. My four kids get physical discipline at times. Now, if I were abusing my kids, the state would certainly have a compelling interest to go in and remove the kids from my home or whatever it might be. But if I swap my kid on the behind with a wooden spoon three times, well, that is my right as a parent if I'm trying to correct their behavior. So I think that would be an example of where the liberty of a parent to direct the upbringing is a fundamental liberty of a parent. And the state has no compelling interest to come into my home and tell me how to raise my kid. Furthermore, the state does mandate, or there is certainly a compelling societal interest that kids are educated. However, I don't need the state coming into my home and telling me which school my kids need to go to. I don't need the state coming in and telling me, or for example, if we have a particular agency involved that deals with families. If we have a particular agency and perhaps they're involved in a case for whatever reason, and unless there's a compelling interest, and there are those cases, there are certainly those times when that agency could recommend, we don't want this student to go to this school or whatever, but there are times when that agency has no business whatsoever telling that family which school that child should go to. And so I think those are examples, and hopefully that helps.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against this bill, first, I think it's unnecessary that the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Troxville versus Granville is very firm that there is a fundamental right to parent. And for the new folks in this body, as well as others, I want to remind you of a couple of years ago, we addressed in here a horrific situation that happened in my county where a little boy was found in a cage outside. And law enforcement had been called and DFS had been called on several separate occasions. But because the fundamental right to parent is so strong in Wyoming that they felt that they could not act until we legislatively had a statute that permitted them a little iota into that home more than they had then. So we have that fundamental right to parent here, and we absolutely want our state actors, our law enforcement, our DFS, our teachers, to be able to act in those horrific situations. So again, on and against this bill, we already have that fundamental right, and it is clear in Wyoming.
Representative Salazar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honorable members, I stand up and strongly support this bill. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would just like to point out that I support this bill wholeheartedly as well. As I'm soon to be a father, I think it's great that this body will recognize the fact that we as parents do have that fundamental right. Thank you very much.
Representative Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to let you know that I support the bill that you have before him. I believe that parental rights is one of the rights that God gave each parent, and this bill does not protect the bad parents. It protects the good parents. You cannot make a, a bad parent to be a good parent. That's why we have the state step in. But it protects the good parents when they need protection. On and for the bill. Thank you.
Further questions?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman, I don't remember, Greer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 153 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 153 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Madam Chairman.
Majority Floor Leader.
We need to move the next bill, House Joint Resolution 4, House Bill 136, and House Bill 137 to the bottom of the list. And just try to get through the next two bills. They shouldn't be that difficult, and then we'll call it a day.
Good plan. We are on House Bill 171. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 171, introduced by Representative Barlow. Unemployment insurance, delinquency contributions, an act relating to unemployment compensation. Madam Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 71, Unemployment Insurance, Delinquency Contributions, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Giroux, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Halverson, Vice Chair.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 171 do pass, and I further move the House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a companion bill to the workers' comp bill that I presented earlier. Because the UI system has a federal nexus, we don't have some of the same latitude. They already have the payment plan program. So the one thing I could do with this one was be able to relieve or give the agency the ability to relieve the interest rate increase, or the rate increase, not interest rate increase that may be applicable if they become delinquent. So if we'll go on the bill to page 2, and I actually flipped this. If you recall from the last one, we were collect up to double in the last bill. Well, this one did the same thing, and I actually flipped it and said, look, for good cause, we can actually eliminate or reduce the payment due to that delinquency rate. And what the delinquency rate is your rate is set on 6, 7, 8%, somewhere in, let's say, in that range. And if you become delinquent, they automatically can add 2% to it. But for good cause, or there's some criteria that's already in statute, we can actually reduce that. So we're reducing the burden on our businesses, the same thing we tried to do with workers' comp. So that's the first thing. We flipped it and gave them the ability to actually reduce the imposition. We added the good cause. This is a standard that's used in the other program, workers' comp. And then if you go down, this is current language, and this starts on line 7, or a finding, because we added good cause, or a finding. We raised the $200 to $1,000. There's about 2,400 folks that are delinquent within this program, and they figured by going from 200 to 1,000, they'd be able to give some relief to about half of the people in there. This is not the chronic people. These are the folks that get caught in a cash flow crisis. So, Madam Chairman, that is the bill, and I'd stand for any questions. I'd ask for your adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And this is just, as some of you know, preciseness is a gift that some folks in our body have. And the preciseness is to insert the correct terms on line 5 as they are reflected in subsection B above. So in B above, it states delinquency tax rate increase. And so a good member of our committee that wanted to be very precise in making sure we're referring to the same rate increase. So that's why this was added. It's for clarity. So with that, I would ask for your positive consideration of the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill, and the question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Barlow's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill Number 171 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 171 has passed the Committee of the Whole. House Bill 24. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 24, introduced by Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. Water Commission Duties, an act relating to water. Madam Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 24, Water Commission Duties, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blake, Claussen, Gray, Haley, Henderson, Hunt, Larson, Steinmetz, excused, McKim. Signed, Representative Larson, Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 24 do pass, and I'll quickly explain this bill. This is, by and large, basically some clarification and some cleanup language. This was brought to the committee. What we were told and what we understand is that after an audit here a couple years ago to the department, that there was some murky understanding as to what some of the duties were. And so basically we're codifying what's been done here. So on page 3, the new language states that Romanet, line 2, Romanet 16, is that the director and the office shall have the authority to annually, after office approval, delegate administrative duties to the Wyoming Water Development Office to facilitate the effective operation of the commission. And so, once again, basically this is codifying language, and I would, that's the gist of it. I would stand for questions.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I guess the one question I'd have is, what I hope we're not doing, or at least without understanding what we're doing, we're not shifting duties that were the commission's then just to the Water Development Office. So I just want to make sure that the commission's not losing its authority or it's being diluted by some way by this. So explain a little bit more to me what's going on here, please.
Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the good Majority Whip, no, the commission is not losing any of its authority. This is, once again, this is clarifying what the duties were. Basically, where this was standing was that the director was essentially shunting off his duties to the commission, and so the commission is not losing any authority. It's not losing any delegation here. This is simply putting into statute what the director does and does not do.
Okay. Representative Crank.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I would ask to bring her the bill on page 2, a little bit of clarification for me. Line 1, have authority to temporarily defer. And temporarily defer is identified several times, but I'm not sure how long is temporarily defer?
Vice Chairman Hunt, can you answer that question?
Madam Chair, I apologize to the good speaker. Could you repeat that? Thank you.
Representative Crank, please repeat that.
Thank you, Chairman. On page 2, line 1, it has have authority to temporarily defer, and then down in the paragraph a little more, we talk about temporarily defer. What is the meaning of temporarily deferred? Is temporary, your understanding and mine may be completely different.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That's already in statute. That's nothing we're adding here. And this is a result. Management Council ordered an audit of Select Water Committee and the Wyoming Water Development Commission, and this was the results of that audit. We needed to get this in statute the way the commission and everything works together, to the best of my knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Hunt? No? Further discussion? Question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice Chairman Hunt's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 24 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 24 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairwoman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Your card is right here. There's your motion you're
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
January 25th, 2017. Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 84, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 91, amended. And further amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 117, recommended do pass. House Bill 40, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 120, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 111, recommended do pass. House Bill 114, and further amended, and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 152, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 161, recommended do pass. House Bill 98, recommended do pass. House Bill 153, recommended do pass. House Bill 171, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 24, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Flitner, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Congratulations. Congratulations, Representative. Thank you. That was congratulations, Representative Flitner. Well done. Members, we're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
House Joint Resolution 1, introduced by Representative Winters, Convention for Proposing Constitutional Amendments. A joint resolution requesting Congress to call a convention for proposing amendments to the United States Constitution as specified. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 1, Convention for Proposing Constitutional Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Kirkbride, Olson, Pownell, Winters, Noes, Representatives Baker, Jennings, Pelkey, and Salazar. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 47, introduced by Representative Barlow. Water Rights Procedures, an act relating to water. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 47, Water Rights Procedures, respectfully reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 139, introduced by Representative Northrup. School Finance, Court-Ordered Placement, an act relating to school finance. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 139, School Finance, Court-Ordered Placement, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 144, introduced by Representative Pelkey. New trial based on actual innocence, an act relating to criminal procedure. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 144, new trial based on actual innocence, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 61, introduced by Representative Klassen. Collection of Antlers and Horns, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 61, Collection of Antlers and Horns, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, McGuire, Steinmetz. Excused, Representative Halverson. Signed, Representative Garou, Vice Chairman. House Bill 124, introduced by Representative Greer. Uniform Chess Code Amendments, an act related to the Uniform Trust Code. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 124, Uniform Trust Code Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux, excused, Representative Klassen. Signed, Representative Laux, Vice Chairman. House Bill 125, introduced by Representative Greer, Sealing of Trust Documents, an act related to the Uniform Trust Code. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 125, Sealing of Trust Documents, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux. Excused, Representative Klassen. Conflict, Representative Byrd. Signed, Representative Laux, Vice Chairman. House Bill 192, introduced by Representative Nicholas. Court Automation Fee, 2, an act relating to court fees. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee, 2, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux. Excused, Representative Klassen. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Before we move to messages from the Senate, I think we have a couple of motions. And I'd like to recognize Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pursuant to House Rule 12-11C, I move House Bill 77 be reconsidered tomorrow following third reading.
Okay, that motion is in order, and it does, as a procedural motion, does not require a second. So House Bill, the vote to reconsider will be at the end of third reading tomorrow on House Bill 77. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pursuant to Rule 5-6, I would move to recall House Bill 174 from your committee number 6 and then refer it to committee number 7, Corporations.
Okay, members, this motion and Representative Clem, that motion is in order and it requires 5 seconds, so I'd ask that your seconds would please stand. And we'll enter you in the computer. So, Representative Clem.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clem, I have as your seconds Representative Zwanitzer, Representative Lindholm, Representative Pelkey, Representative Miller, and Representative Brown. Thank you, members. The bill itself is not debatable, but the motion itself and perhaps reasons why, those kind of things can be expressed to the body, but we will not debate the bill itself. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is House Bill 174, Game Roadkill, and it died in committee. ironically enough, pardon me, Mr. Speaker. This died on a 4-4 tie vote, and one of our members who experienced a family tragedy was not there, and she was not able to leave a proxy vote, and was counting on her to put that over the edge. And so this is an unusual request, but feel that this bill has worthy merits and would like to bring it back from the dead. So,
Mr. Chairman, point of order, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker. So,
Representative Nicholas, what's your point?
I'm looking at rule. I'm trying to put this roadkill back on the ground. The on referring on rule 5.6, if there's been a vote in committee, I think that the bill must be died, that you can't transfer it after there's been a vote from the committee. But I'd like perhaps some other input on that or a rules committee, one or the other.
Representative Chairman Zwanitzer, for your first time.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And while there's another motion, just bring it right to this body first as chair of committee number 7, certainly happy to take it. But in my 12 years, we have done this two other times after a bill did fail in committee by a 5-4 vote. it was recalled, and I can remind the body if you'd like. One was sales tax on food, which those of us who were here 10 years ago fondly remember, and the other was an education bill on concussions. So there is some precedent, at least two in my 12 years, for doing this after they did, in fact, go down in committee. This one, they just can't hold the vote open until the good representative comes back.
Okay. Any other members? And my interpretation and my memory is very similar to the chairman. In fact, one of those was my motion I made on one bill. And so I don't read it in the rule that any bill can be recalled from the committee is the way I interpret the rule. Any other member would like to speak for their first time? Representative Grew.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While once again I'm new to this body, I was on the committee, and the committee took a vote. And while I too, mourn with a member that was not here in her time of pain, but I cannot surmise what her vote would have been, nor would I try. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I just reiterate that this situation was 4-4. It was a tie. I think this has due cause to come out and go to another committee that can break the tie, so to speak.
Any other member would like to speak on roadkill for their first time? And I applaud the bringer of the amendment for such an educational process for the body. Anyone else for their first time? Any member for their second time? Okay, members, this will take a majority of members elected, and so we will take a roll call vote.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Excused.
Barlow.
Aye.
Biteman.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
Aye.
Crank.
No.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Air. Air.
Excused.
Flintner.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Garou.
No.
Gray.
Aye.
Greer. No.
Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye. Halverson excused.
Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kinner.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
McGuire.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim
excused. Miller.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Obermuller.
No.
Olson.
No.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Piperinen.
Aye.
Pawnell.
Aye.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Sweeney.
No.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Blackburn? Blackburn? Larson Dan.
Aye.
To no. Other changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 34 aye, 22 no, 4 excused.
Thank you. Having received an affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected, House Bill 174 is recalled from Committee Number 6 and referred to Committee Number 7. Roadkill lives on. Thank you, Representative Clem. Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to re-refer House Bill 192 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
House Bill 192 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. We are at that order of business now. Messages from the Senate.
January 25th, 2017, message number 152. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 24, Film Industry Financial Incentive Program, ayes 20, noes 10. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 153. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts, ayes 30. signed Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 154. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below the Senate passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 50, Civics Educational Programs. Ayes 26, noes 4. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 155. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 51, Approval of Water Funds Transfer. Ayes 30. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 156. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 86, Game and Fish Permits. Ayes 19, noes 11. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 157. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 90, Allocation of Complementary Hunting Licenses. Ayes 23, noes 7. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 158. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 99, Community and Rural Health Clinic Grants, sunset date. Ayes 30. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 159. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 100, Limited Liability Companies. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 160. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 105, Uniform Power of Attorney Act. Ayes 30. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 161. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 52, Fund Balance Definition. Ayes 30. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A schedule update for Friday will be coming into the session at 9:30, and we'll only have an hour and a half for lunch on Friday. All 5 days next week will come in at 9 a.m. and just break for an hour and a half at lunch. And, Mr. Speaker, the general file for tomorrow, the first five bills will be House Bill 58, House Bill 76, House Bill 86, House Bill 113, and House Bill 121. Then the remaining bills on your blue list, and we're going to add the following bills, House Joint Resolution 1, House Bill 47, House Bill 139, 144, 151, 61, 186, 95, 124, and 125. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, January 26, 2017.
Committee announcements. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege.
Please proceed.
Members, we talked about this about 10 days ago. Our chief executive invites us over for receptions, and those begin, I believe, tonight for some of us. So please attend those if you said you would, and RSVP as you get those, as those come out, as you are invited. So just a reminder, a gentle reminder, that sometimes people overlook those things, and that is that's a complete lack of etiquette on our part for not attending if we say we are and not RSVPing. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number one, Judiciary, will meet in the morning at 8 o'clock in Jonah Room L54 to consider House Bill 94, Criminal Justice Reform.
Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in H36 to discuss House Bill 118, Purchase of Water Rights and Facilities, and also House Bill 129, Amendments to the Food Freedom Act. Thank you.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee education number 4 will meet tonight upon adjournment, where we're going to do 3 bills, House Bill 190, Hathaway Reserve Count, House Bill 191, Hathaway Expanded Wyoming Scholarships, House Bill 194, School Safety and Security. I'd also like to remind the body that tomorrow at noon, after adjournment, we're going to go over House Bill 236 for all legislators, and also on Monday at 6:30 that the House Education Committee will meet across the street in the gymnasium of the school, and we are going to work House Bill 236.
Thank you. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7 will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in L51. We're going to ambitiously try to get through 6 bills, House Bill 46, House Bill 68, House Bill 163, House Bill 158, House Bill 167, and House Bill 106. All of these deal with elections and election-related issues.
Sounds exciting. Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow at adjournment. House Bill 74, House Bill 128, and House Bill 176 will be studied and reviewed and worked.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Joint Appropriations House Committee will meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. for House Bill 218 and 219.
Any other committee announcements? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tonight upon adjournment in H37. We'll be considering House Bill 148, Tobacco Prevention, Cessation, and Treatment Programs, and House Bill 211, Developmental Preschool Payment Calculations Amendments.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Okay, before we act on the majority floor leader's motion to adjourn, we have the Cowboys are in action tonight against that.
Mr. Speaker, could I interrupt for privilege?
Please do. Chairman Kirkbride.
Yeah, sorry to not get up here sooner. But anyway, tomorrow morning, the legislative prayer breakfast, we'll hear from Reverend Dave Stratton, who is the chaplain at a very unique and outstanding institution here in the capital city, the Davis Hospice Center. So you're all invited. We'll have breakfast beginning at 6:30. Spouses, staff, and other elected officials are welcome.
Chairman, is that in L51?
In L51.
6:30. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other announcements? Okay, so our very own Representative Blake will lead us in Cowboy Joe, a little fight song. Okay, you've heard the majority floor leader's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, Thursday, January 26th at 10 a.m.